There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Uh-huh.
Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riespendel. I'm your host. On today's program, we're going out to the East Coast, into New York State, Nyack, New York in particular, to talk to DJ Johnny Silver. He's a guy who's bringing 12 hours a day of live pirate radio to the little city of Nyack, on the shores of the Hudson, but not New York City. He's going to tell us more of why he's doing it and why he's willing to be so upfront about it. And, of course, we'll catch up with what's going on in our media environment with Media Geek Headline News coming up in just a second. Do stay tuned. The battle over the future of the internet is heating up on Capitol Hill. The House Energy and Commerce Committee is currently drafting telecommunications legislation that will address many internet-related issues, including the ability of the nation's largest telephone companies, like Verizon and AT&T, to offer cable TV services over their broadband lines. Left out of this draft at the House are any safeguards for network neutrality, according to congressional and industry sources, as reported in the National Journal. The baby bells have been fighting a fierce battle against having network neutrality written into law because such rules would restrict their ability to discriminate against any other website that offers audio, video, and other rich multimedia content over the internet. Executives from Verizon, AT&T, and Bell South have all been quoted this year talking about wanting to charge not just their broadband customers for the bandwidth they use, but charge the companies or organizations that provide the music, video, and other content that flows over those broadband lines. Internet content companies like Google and Yahoo, along with public interest groups like Free Press and Consumers Union, accuse the telephone companies of attempting to double-dip and make internet-provided video more expensive so that consumers will prefer cable TV services offered by the likes of AT&T and Verizon. For their part, the big telcos said that they are committed to network neutrality principles and can be trusted not to block content without there being some law. However, they do want the right to create broadband tiers where customers will pay more in order to receive more multimedia content from other companies and organizations via the internet. Critics say such tiers will result in most internet households not having access to a diversity of audio and video content, like independently produced internet radio and video, because it will be priced out of their reach. They argue that the internet we know now, where a single monthly price for a broadband connection allows you access to everything on the web, will turn into an internet where only the stuff offered by Verizon or Comcast is part of the basic package, and you'll have to spend a lot more even just to get downloads of this radio show. Part of the reason why the House committee may not address network neutrality is that the committee members themselves can't find agreement on the issue. So instead, the committee essentially plans to endorse a plan offered by Verizon that would streamline the Bell's ability to offer cable TV services in cities without having to negotiate with local municipalities like traditional cable operators have to. Of course, the nation's cable companies don't like such a competitive advantage being handed to these new entrants, so the current draft bill would similarly deregulate a city's dominant cable provider once the competitor reached a 15% market share. While cable TV providers of all stripes would still be required to pay franchise fees to municipalities under this plan, these fees would be fixed and non-negotiable. Community media and public interest advocates are critical of this deregulation because it could spell the end of community service in public access TV channels, which are largely obtained and funded through a municipality's negotiations with cable companies. The House Energy and Commerce Committee is likely to take up its internet legislation in March, so there is still the possibility that network neutrality could make its way back in. The media policy group Free Press has organized a website to help people contact their federal representatives on the issue of network neutrality. Go to netfreedomnow.org. And back on the topic of cable TV, on February 15th, the Senate Commerce Committee took up the issue of cable TV franchising as well, hearing testimony on the issue from the telephone and cable industries, in addition to representatives from the Alliance for Community Media and Public Knowledge. Unfortunately, key senators on that committee have come out in favor of national cable TV franchises that would take away negotiating power from local municipalities, and support for this deregulation stretches across the aisle. Republicans Gordon Smith of Oregon, Jim DeMint of South Carolina, John Ensign of Nevada, and John McCain of Arizona joined Democrats Jay Rockefeller of West Virginia and John Kerry of Massachusetts in signing on various statements of principles in support of national franchises. The Baby Bells, which want to offer cable over their broadband internet lines, claim that negotiating individual contracts with each city they want to offer TV services in is a slow process that will delay the entry of competition and raise prices for consumers. The existing cable operators challenge these claims. In particular, Cablevision Chief Operating Officer Tom Rutledge told the Commerce Committee that AT&T and Verizon have not made good faith efforts to obtain local franchises, or they would have received more. Rutledge said the much smaller Cablevision received 100 franchises within the 3 years that Verizon obtained just 50. The current cable franchise law mandates a minimum 5% fee that cable operators pay back to local governments, but allows for municipalities to negotiate for more. Anthony Biddle, executive director of the Alliance for Community Media, told senators that those extra funds are often used to pay for public access, education, and government channels that would be threatened if the fee were capped at 5%, as proposed by many lawmakers. Gene Gimmelman, vice president of Consumers Union, asked senators to provide strong protections for consumers and communities, like offering service to all households within a municipality and implementing requirements to ensure that public access and government channels are properly funded and public services like schools and libraries have adequate broadband internet access. The Senate Commerce Committee is on a similar timetable as the House, with Chairman Ted Stevens expecting to bring a draft bill on cable franchising and internet issues, including net neutrality, sometime in March to his committee. And that's some of what's going on in our media environment. And I do want to take this moment here to underline a fact that I've been talking about for several weeks here on Media Geek, that 2006 is going to be a seminal year for telecommunications and all communications policy as these sorts of laws are being drafted, debated, and written in Congress. 1996 was a huge year for the media and for media law. 1996 was the year of the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which radically deregulated radio ownership. Prior to 1996, there could not have been a Clear Channel owning 1,200 stations nationwide, nor the likes of Infinity and other companies, which own hundreds into thousands of stations. That type of deregulation in the media sphere, as well as deregulation in the internet and cable sphere, is on the table and is actively being discussed. But unlike 1996, I think more people are aware. Certainly there are more organizations to get the public aware, like Free Press. Consumers Union is another old organization working very hard on these sorts of things. And in 1996, I was not here with Media Geek, and we did not have programs like Bob McChesney's Media Matters on WILL AM here in Champaign-Urbana. There is more information here, and I hope that it is important. I hope that people think about what is going on. And one of the biggest things you can do, of course, is contact your elected representatives, because they are the people who will be passing these laws. And while money speaks strongly in the halls of Congress, the push of the campaign contributions is very strong. Also very strong are constituent calls, constituent emails, constituent faxes, and constituent letters. When your elected representatives hear strongly on an issue, it makes it difficult for them to do otherwise. It doesn't mean they won't, but that means they have to come back and face their own constituents and tell them why, despite the public outcry, they decide to go a different way. Also, 2006 is a midterm election year, It is a re-election of the House. And so a lot of House members may want to put off these decisions because they may not want to be hung up by them if they believe that their constituents feel very strongly. That is one thing to do. Another thing to do is to talk to your friends. Talk to other people. Talk to your family about this. And make sure people know that the internet they enjoy today may not be the internet they enjoy tomorrow. As content that you're used to being able to download for free as part of your basic package that's provided by any number of nonprofit services could go away or could become subject to an extra charge, or a provider like MediaGeek or WEFT, the station here, could be charged way extra by the likes of Verizon and SBC over and above what we already pay to be on the net. This is a year to pay attention to telecommunications issues, and I will continue to keep you up to date as much as I can here on the program and on the blog at www.mediageek.net, where you can also download the program if you miss it here on the air. Send me any comments you have, paul@mediageek.net. And I'll be back in just a moment talking with DJ Johnny Silver of Iron Action Radio, unlicensed radio in Nyack, New York. Do stay tuned.
My fellow citizens, we seek the total control of every person and mind and soul. The American flag stands for power. The American flag stands for ambitions of conquest. The American flag stands for destructive desire. The American flag stands for tyranny and fanaticism. America fully supports dictatorship. America fully supports torture. America fully supports the propaganda business, the strategy our nation is pursuing in Iraq. To prevent Iraqi self-government is a massive undertaking. I sent American troops to Iraq to destroy its people. Our coalition has a clear goal. It is a totalitarian political ideology.
And welcome back to Media Geek. My name is Paul Reesmanell. I'm your host. I first heard about DJ Johnny Silver broadcasting Iron Action on licensed radio in Nyack, New York about a year ago. And that's because he sent out emails to various people. I was a recipient of one. He made posts on news groups and some websites about a series of short films he produced dramatizing a run-in he had had with the FCC about 10 years ago. They're pretty cute films, pretty well done. They don't really accurately depict what happens when the FCC comes, with scenes that look like they come out of a low-budget version of The Matrix. Nevertheless, very clever. And he was doing this partially to promote his films, but also promote the fact that he was back on air, that he returned to the Nyack airwaves to bring his Iron Action Radio out. Since that time, he's actually gotten press coverage in his own hometown of Nyack, New York, which sits on the Hudson, across the way from New York City, but a little bit outside the sphere of that big metroplex, really a small, quaint northeastern town on the Hudson River. He has, in fact, appeared on the front page of the local Nyack newspaper in his old studio, surrounded by listeners and guests to his show, and has gotten to be known around town. And while I can admire someone for wanting to really become such a tremendous part of the community, I also worry a bit, because we all know that unlicensed radio is not currently permitted by the Federal Communications Commission. And while certain stations have attempted to run unlicensed stations as community stations, like Brattleboro Radio and as well as San Francisco Liberation Radio, they also, some of them, take a more low-key approach, knowing that perhaps you don't want to completely advertise where you are. And so I really want to talk to Johnny and find out what is his motivation for bringing this radio station to the town of Nyack and taking on the risks of doing it and being really quite as public as he is. So I spoke with him just a day ago, at least as of airing here, on the 23rd of February. And in fact, he aired the interview as it was going on live on Iron Action Radio in Nyack, New York. And so here, Johnny Silver tells us a little bit about how the station started.
Well, originally the station went on the air in 1996. I came back and moved back up from Florida. I had a transmitter made by Doug Brewer down there, the party pirate. And I came back up here, and Niagara was the perfect place. So I went on the air with a 20-watt transmitter, which actually back in 96, I was covering the whole town. And it was on for about 3 years then, and then I got shut down. And then I restarted in about 2000, let's see, I've been on about two years now.
And so back in 1996, you said you got shut down. That means you were actually visited by the FCC?
Yes, I was visited by the FCC. I all happened at the same time. I was actually working. I worked right across the street from where I, you know, had my transmitter in my studio and stuff. And I was working at the post office. And it's kind of a funny story. I'm kind of proud of the story, actually, because I don't work for the post office anymore, but I used to go home and put the radio on while I delivered my route and stuff, and that way I'd listen to my own music and stuff, and then at night I'd do the whole radio DJing thing. And it became very popular, and it got really popular where I didn't have to even be there anymore. I had DJs around the clock crashing at my place, so it was the biggest thing in Nyack at the time. And then finally I was at work one day, and one of the carriers came by and said, "They're talking about you back in the office." And the cop, you know, he said some guys in suits. He said cops, and I said, "Oh." So ended up that my boss at the time there was a new postmaster at the job, and he didn't know my name. So when they mentioned my name, which they had my real name, well, not saying that Johnny Silver's not my real name, he didn't put two and two together. So he didn't say I was actually right there at the, you know, working there. So they went back to the place. They got in touch with my landlord, and they tried to get access, but my landlord refused because they didn't have a warrant. So they left me a cease and desist order at the at my mailbox, certified letter, which I opened up and sent back that I was deceased. And then I shut down, quit the post office, and stayed off the air for about a year.
Okay, so you never had contact, and never actually saw the station, but you decided to take that as good enough warning to shut down for a while. Right, and so why did you go on the air in the first place back then in 1996?
I just love, you know, when I was living down in Florida, I just loved the, you know, I grew up on public volume, you know, I just loved the idea of pirate radio. I used to listen to shortwave radio when I was a kid, and I just loved it, and I had that little small transmitter I got, and I just started sending my voice out, and I thought that was the best thing in the world, was to send your voice out at night. It was better than, you know, just doing anything. It was just sending your thoughts out and knowing someone out there could be listening. It wasn't really, at the time, wasn't against, I didn't really learn about radio. I just took it as an opportunity to do something, just to do something cool. And it grew. It actually hooked me, and I learned more and more about the radio, and it just took on a life of its own. And then now it's in my blood, and now I care about the radio. I found out how important it is to people.
So why didn't you, say, get involved in the radio industry? Why didn't you become, like, a commercial DJ or get into public radio or something like that?
You know, I'm anti-corporate. I don't like the corporate scene. I like the idea of doing something on the fringe of the law. I understand that, you know, being a pirate and stuff, I know the dangers of it and stuff, and that actually, you know, inspires me, because I feel like, you know, the whole issue with the airwaves and the FCC, it doesn't apply to a lot of people, and yet they're enforcing the laws where, you know, the laws, like a radio station where I'm here, is very beneficial to the community, and there's nothing on this station, this frequency, and it's very beneficial, and people love it. So, you know, there's no reason why it shouldn't be on the air.
And so you went back on the air, I guess, in about 2004 or so, after a hiatus of probably close to 8 years. I mean, what was it that brought you back, even after the scare, you know, and maybe getting close to really getting caught? Why go back to taking these risks?
Like I said, it's something about pirate radio. It's always in your blood. Once you've done it and you've learned to do it correctly and you see how radio works and the need for it, it's something that doesn't really die off. I mean, I know, you know, a lot of people, you know, pass that point in their lives where they've done it when they were younger, and now they moved on with a career and stuff. It just never left me. I always had that passion to do it.
But what is it that Iron Action Radio then brings to NIAC that wouldn't be there anyway? Well, I mean, you say it's good for the community and you're bringing something to the community. What is that? What is that thing that you and your station bring?
Well, NIAC is a very tight-knit community. It's right on the Hudson River here. It has I would say it has very well-known borders. It's surrounded by a mountain on one side, it has a river on the other side. So when you come down into NIAC, you come down into this, your own community, and it's a very liberal community. Our mayor's gay. It's a lot of cultural activities happening here, lots of art, and a lot of things that I'm involved in, and I feel like to promote it, because I love my town so much, I use the radio to promote all these activities. I actually started up it's called the NIAC Social Scene, and that runs in, like, it kind of runs with the NIAC radio. So they put, everyone that wants things listed on the radio or posted on the radio would post it on these boards, and I would just, announce them over the radio.
Are there other commercial stations or public or community radio stations in NIAC?
There is no other community radio station. There's actually a college radio, NIAC College, which is a Christian college.
So they're not doing anything too cutting edge or too out there, huh?
No. There is another, a friend of mine has what's called Rockland World Radio, which is an internet, the closest thing to a community radio would be the internet radio show that's here in Rockland. And I work with him, I sometimes guest DJ on and we simulcast our shows together. But that's on the internet, and I don't believe that internet broadcasting is real pirate radio. I believe pirate radio is all about, even though it sounds kind of harsh, taking back the airwaves, building your transmitter, learning how to do it, and just believing in yourself and doing a good show. Something that's not, that has no boundaries.
And so you're, though, taking a lot of risk, and I would say, and I've written this on my Media Geek blog in the past, you're taking on more risk than most unlicensed pirate broadcasters. I mean, you've made these movies, which you star in, is that correct? Is that really you?
Yes, that's me.
That's really you. So we get to see your face, and you've been on the cover of your local newspaper. They're doing a radio show with, looks like, friends and listeners there. I mean, you're very public about this.
Yeah, I actually want to bring, I'm not calling out for the law to come looking for me, but if they do come looking for me, I'm just going to take the next step. I have a plan of action. I planned this out coming back in a way that I knew what I did the last time and why certain things happened. And now, I don't look forward to when, like I said in that article, and you mentioned in your blog, it was good. I'm not really scared of the FCC coming to look for me. I mean, I understand that probably will happen, and when that happens, then I'm going to take the next step. The next step, I have a whole, and that next step is going to be based on the movie. The movie's going to be based on that next step.
And so do you kind of expect the SEC to show up? I mean, New York City, where the closest office is not far away. Do you expect them to come up the couple hours it is to come see you?
Really? I don't know why they would come. How would they hear about this? I mean, unless someone complained
quite frankly, I mean, they do troll the internet. They do news searches looking for this sort of thing. I mean, they're not, the FCC, they don't have a lot of resources for looking after pirates. They do spend some effort. You're right, they do also work off of complaints quite a bit. And if someone from NIAC were to write a complaint letter, they'd probably respond to that more quickly. But, I think it's probably, if you're showing up on the front page of your newspaper, I think it's probably fair to say they have a clue that you're there. Whether or not you've come up to the top of the list is a different question.
Yeah, true. Yeah, true. I mean, I had a listener say, he used to listen to me, but once he saw the article and my face on the front page, he didn't give me 2 weeks. He didn't say, this guy is gone. He's a goner. And nothing happened from it, and now I'm more careful. I move the station around a lot. I don't expect that they will, eventually corner me. you know, and figure out, you know, how I'm streaming. And, you know, I move the station around quite a bit. And it's just a, I have plans, you know.
Sure. And but it's worth the risk for you.
Oh, definitely. It's definitely worth the risk. Tell you the truth, if I was still down in Florida, and now that it's a felony to have a pirate radio station, I would hesitate then. Kind of fear the day when they make the punishment a little stronger.
You could, though, broadcast and do your show, but keep a lower profile. I mean, you could certainly, you know, not let your picture be taken, maybe not be so public with it. So why are you willing to take that step? Why are you willing to take on the risk of making the station so much more public and so much well known there in Nyack?
Well, I want the station to be so popular and so loved by the community. You know, we have a lot of influential people in Nyack. I mean, I'm not saying that they all listen, but the station's well known in Nyack. I mean, you go to everyone, and before I came back with the radio, they knew me that I was the old pirate DJ. And it was, you know, like I said, it's a very tight community. So a community like this, you know, you're known when you walk down the street. I don't think I could hide doing the radio and keep my identity secret and enjoy the town I live in. You know, it's important that people knew me and associated me with the radio, and we could network, and I could find out what's going on in town, and I could spread the news on certain issues and stuff. I used, I used the radio to discuss important issues, you know, anything, town board meetings. So I want the station to become so beneficial for the town that if there would be, you know, an issue brought up, you know, or the FCC did come up and try to shut me down, I know I'm not going to have a foot to stand on it, but at least we'll see if there's any kind of community support that can rally against this and bring the station into more light. You know, they'll bring more focus to the station if there's a big community following to it, and eventually maybe they'll make a difference. You know, it'll make a difference down the line for any other pirates and stuff. You know, you never know what's going to come from your actions until you take those actions. You know, a lot of people just say, well, I'm not going to do it because it's too risky. I feel like, well, I'm going to do it because it's risky, and the payoff might be better than if I didn't do it. I was too concerned about my own welfare.
Well, very good. Right. Stay safe, Johnny, and keep it up.
Keep you up on everything that happens. Good night.
And that was DJ Johnny Silver from Iron Action Radio in Nyack, New York. You can tune it in online and see his website at nyackradio.com. nyackradio.com. And you can learn more about Johnny Silver and other topics like unlicensed radio at the Media Geek website, www.mediageek.net. And I will actually be taking more of that interview. There was way more to it than I can fit into the show here. We got to some interesting points about looking for a low-power FM license, which, incidentally, I've checked out, and you can't get one in Nyack, New York, because it's too close to New York City. So he really couldn't get a licensed low-power station, even if he wanted one. But we did get into that subject and talked about some other elements of running an unlicensed station in a small, compact, but tight-knit city like Nyack, New York. And that rest of that interview will be posted at radio.mediageek.net. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm your host and producer, Paul Riesmandel, and I'll be back in 1 week with more news about grassroots and independent media, as well as our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek online at mediageek.net, where you'll find the Media Geek blog with frequently updated news and views about our media. You can also download the program at radio.mediageek.net or subscribe to the podcast to have it automatically downloaded to your computer or MP3 player. That's all at mediageek.net. The closing music is Fire in the Sky by Adam Lowe. Media Geek is produced live at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Some segments are pre-recorded at Media Geek Studios. And Media Geek is heard on 9 other community stations around North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND in Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington. Media Geek is free to air on your local community radio station, too. Just drop me a line at paul@mediageek.org. That email address is also good for any comments you want to send in about the program. Once again, that's paul@mediageek.org. Thanks for tuning in.